All right, my friends, welcome back to a special edition of the Build Show podcast. This is a 50th birthday party edition. I've got my good friend Tim Hill here. We're going to have some fun today, guys. We're talking about a topic that I've been thinking about a long time, and Tim and I have been bantering about this ahead of time, but what would the 50-year-old Matt tell the 30-year-old Matt? In other words, what big advice would I give to myself a couple years ago? Today's Build Show from the Rockwell Studios in Austin, Texas. Let's get going. Before we jump into today's podcast, I want to say a big thanks to our podcast sponsor, Builders First Source. Now, I've been a customer of theirs since about the year 2000, so I'm going on two decades of working with these guys, and I've actually worked with them in more than one location. When I was starting to work with them was in Portland, Oregon, and that's when I worked with BMC. And you probably know that they've merged BMC and Builders First Source. When did that happen? Maybe 2 years ago now? So now they are a very large organization with tentacles all over the U.S. I think they've got like 500-plus locations. Really good company, really good people. If you're not currently doing business with them, I highly recommend you check them out. I'm buying rough lumber, all my framing lumber from them. I'm buying my trim packages, windows and doors for both interior and exterior. They really have a giant catalog. They do cabinets in a lot of places. This is a really good company with good people. I'd recommend you find your local BFS location and find someone who can service your building or remodeling business. With that being said, let's get back to today's podcast. All right, guys, y'all know Tim Hill. He's been on the show many times. Tim and I have been friends for, 17 years now, Tim. I moved here and met you right after I moved here,
right,
through the Home Builder Association in 05. Tim and I have been building houses together for more than a decade now or so. But Tim's a few years older than I am. I kind of think of you as my older brother. And so, Tim, how many years have you been building now?
Well, I started in 1980.
Okay.
Right. So whatever that translates to, 42 years.
Yeah. And I started in 1995. So I'm 15 years behind you. Which is about right. I got a brother that's 10 and a brother that's 11 years older. So you're just slightly older than my older brother. And today's topic is, what advice would we give, Matt at age 30? But I think the same thing goes for you. What advice would you give Tim Hill 20 years ago? And I think we're specifically obviously talking about business advice, builder advice. As you and I were talking, I think one of the big pieces of advice would be understanding and knowing yourself and what type of builder you want to be and what type of day-to-day job you want to fulfill. Why don't you flesh that out for us a little bit?
Well, I think what you and I have bantered around about over the past is the different aspects of contracting and the business aspects, the technical aspects, and what each of us feels most passionate about. It's easy to see that in any business, regardless of whether it's home building or building widgets, the business aspect is really the driving force behind what makes a company profitable, mm-hmm, and what makes it sustainable and long lasting. But to gain the opportunity to even have a business that can thrive for a long time, you have to be good at what you do. You have to be good at building. Mm-hmm. So the technical aspects, understanding how things go together, understanding how to source materials, to motivate contractors, subcontractors, and also how to deal with clients, mm-hmm, and how to sell. You know, there's so many different aspects that we have to be as home builders. We learn over the years which ones of those we're better at and which ones we're not.
Yeah. And I think you and I are very alike in a lot of ways. We have pretty similar personalities in that we really like to dig into the details. We're really interested in building in a way that's lasting and durable. We're always willing to question what we've done in the past and say, hey, was that the best way to do it? And is there a better way? So I would say that you and I are similar in that we really are, in some respects, technicians first, and probably businessmen and profit-minded second. And I think the advice that I would give myself as the 30-year-old Matt, and actually I didn't really start the company until I was probably 32 or so. I think we're 17 years, 18 years in business, would be you need to focus on the business as well as the technical. And don't assume that the business will come if the technical's there. You really, you know, as I'm speaking to Matt as the 32-year-old Matt, you need to be focused on the business side of the business and not just the building side of the business. Could you expand on that a little bit?
I think that's very true. And this goes, it's an interesting way to look at it. You can be interested in one aspect of the business and totally uninterested in another. And in that case, it's not a matter of you learning it over time and mastering that side of the business as well, because you'll never be interested in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what you're describing, is somebody who's so interested and passionate about the technical aspects of building that they'll never really be interested in the business aspects of it. And so in that case, you have to partner up or delegate that to some other entity that you know and trust.
Yep.
And then I think that regardless whether you're a home builder, remodeler, or subcontractor, whatever, that holds true. I personally, I'm kind of interested, although not passionate, about the business side, mm-hmm. because it's another mechanism. If you think about it, it's a process, yep. and that's my passion, is process.
Yep.
And whether it's the process of home building or whether it's the process of running a home building company, I'm interested in both processes. Although I'm not as passionate about that side of it, I like to see and analyze the cash flow, the financial statements, the balance sheets, and all that, and see how my performance as a home builder is affecting my bottom line. Mm-hmm. So to that end, I'm interested in it, although I would much rather delegate it to somebody else and spend my time out on job sites, yeah, working with clients and subcontractors.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I was listening to, there's another podcast I really like called the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast. And it's an interesting podcast in that Andy Stanley is a kind of a church businessman, and was talking about how over the years, as their church got bigger, his leadership role changed, and he really realized how he needed to focus on what he was good at and hire for what he wasn't good at. And I think that is something that I've done well over the years. Maybe not, I don't think I realized that as young as I should have, probably. And I kind of think back to my first year or two in business. I worked out of my dining room table as my office the first year in business. I had young kids. It was no big deal. My wife was working long hours. I didn't have other commitments. It was fine to work a 15-hour workday, let's say, be at the job site all day, come home and do receipts and QuickBooks and figure out payroll. But I was really not good at it, and I probably did it longer than I should have. And I remember that feeling of relief when I found a part-time bookkeeper, a woman named Lisa, who still works for a builder friend of mine today, knowing that she was excellent at it and really liked it and was doing it during the day when I was doing other things, such that when I got back to the office in the afternoon, late afternoons, I just had to review things. I didn't have to input any data. She already had the payables ready to go. I just had to sign things and verify that everything looked good. Man, that was a feeling of relief. And I thought, why did I not look for and find that Lisa earlier on? But I think that role also, not having that role, limited me a little bit in that I was really not that good at the bookkeeping side of the business, even though I was trying to do it myself. And so had I found that position a little sooner, I think that's certainly a piece of advice. And also, as I've grown, as we've grown as a company over the years, and I've grown personally as a leader, I think more and more I've realized, gosh, I really need to work only on my strengths and hire really for my weaknesses. What would you say about that?
Well, I want your audience to know that the one aspects of Matt Reisinger's personality is he knows how to align himself with trustworthy, competent people. And so a good Thanks, portion Dan. Of your success is your ability to read people, to befriend people, to build trust among your team, and get the most out of them.
Yeah,
I think that's great advice for everyone. If they could mimic that quality in you and learn how to delegate to people that they trust and foster into whatever role they need them to be, that you can then go back and focus on the things that you like to do.
Yeah, and that's also been, I think, a big part of our success as a company, and you've definitely led that charge, Tim, of making sure we use the same subcontractors over and over again, that we maintain a good relationship with them. And if a subcontractor turns from being trustworthy to untrustworthy, that we don't stick with them, though. That is the one thing that we will be a little bit ruthless on is, you know, we've had to let a couple subs go in the last couple years. And probably in the pandemic, we've found a few more subs, unfortunately, that weren't as reliable. And when a sub turns the unreliable and makes us look bad, that's when we cut ties and move on.
I think that's one of our tenets around here is that we basically tell people that if you make us look bad, you're not on our team.
No, that's right.
And I think everybody needs to take that position, that the people that work for you need to make you and your company look good. Mm-hmm. And as long as they do that, then they're fulfilling what they need to do for us.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's good advice, too, for the young Matt out there. During the recession, I can think very specifically of a house that I was talking to a homeowner in 2007, 2008. You know, this is a really bad time in the economy. And the homeowner was saying, look, Matt, you need three bids in every category because, you know, we want the best price we possibly can to build this. And I was like, yes, sir. I didn't want to lose the business. And almost every time in my career that I did that, we don't do that anymore, but during that period, I paid a very dear price for that. And very specifically that client, you know, the client, it's someone that we just worked for again recently, thank the Lord. Yeah. But every scupper on that house leaked. I had a year of sleepless nights thinking that they were going to call me about rain infiltration. And when it came, push came to shove, we realized that the low cost sub did a terrible job. We had to rip off the entire roof and replace it. It was on my nickel. And Mundo saved my bacon on that and did it for a very low cost. That's a roofer, by the way, that Ray Ton just hooked me up with. But that was a hugely valuable lesson for me to say, look, I really need to hire qualified and good trades in every phase of the build. And I need to make sure that I'm not bidding unqualified people. And the way to get trades that are loyal to you is by using them over and over again. And if you need to, talking to them about how they can continue to do your work and how you will be loyal to them if they'll give you consistent pricing.
That's right. And I think setting expectations, you know, we learn when we speak a whole lot about setting expectations with clients. Mm-hmm. The same thing holds true of all the people that work for us downstream. And that is that we have to have a great understanding of what we expect from them. And in exchange, we need to live up to what they expect from us. We need to pay them regularly. Mm-hmm. We can't mistreat them. We have to treat them with respect. We have to understand that they're the experts in what they do and trust them in what they do. And that symbiotic relationship on an ongoing basis, project after project after project, makes our jobs easier, more consistent, makes us look better.
Yeah, for sure. Tim, one thing that I've learned from you as my older brother builder is that it's okay to tell a client bad news. And in fact, you're much better off telling them that early. Talk to me about
and often.
And often. Tell me about that philosophy and how you came up with that, because I think that's great advice for 20 years ago, Matt.
Well, let me frame it in a little bit higher level, and that is that the most successful projects that we have are where we can enlist a client as a team member. Mm-hmm. So if you engage the client to the extent that they are aware of the ongoing challenges and the ongoing work and decisions that have to be made on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, then as problems occur, they're already a member of the problem-solving team. It's not like, oh my God, there's a problem. It's like, we saw this coming. We have the resources to deal with it. Now let's sit down and collaborate, resolve the problem, and move on. They love that process. It's not only not a surprise, it's a welcome opportunity to feel like they were part of the process.
That's right.
If they're excluded from that and they're only told the bad news after the fact, that's a recipe for disaster.
Boy, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Any advice on client management, or even maybe backing up a step, choosing the right clients to manage? that you'd give to the Matt Reisinger and Tim Hill 20 years ago?
Well, one thing we've learned is that we also are more successful in projects that we are engaged earlier. Mm-hmm. So if we are brought a set of plans by an architect or design team and or a client, after the plans are finished, after a lot of design decisions are made, after site conditions are baked in, and we're asked to give a price as a competitive builder, we're probably not going to be successful on that project. Yeah. But if we're brought in early and have input in the design and budgeting process, we're going to be much more capable of making good decisions, budgeting properly, giving the team good feedback so that they can make good decisions. It just seems to work better. And I think that any opportunity we get to promote that team working collaborative design process is better. Now, mm-hmm. what that also does for, to address your immediate question, is that it gives us a dating opportunity. We are now dating this team before any ground is broken to see if it's a good fit.
That's right.
Right. And we can then judge, is this client capable of making rational, timely decisions? Mm-hmm. Are they capable of trusting us and making sure that the resources to do the project properly are there? Mm-hmm. And if the answer during this dating process, this design and budgeting process, is yes, yep. this looks like a great fit, then you're going to be successful in that project. But if you have questions, or if it looks like they question every decision you make or every recommendation you make, and they won't trust you, they won't take your advice, it's better to start looking for an exit plan.
Boy, that's for sure. That's great advice.
Yeah.
This is switching gears a little bit to a kind of a personal thing. But one thing that I was thinking about, Tim, as we were putting this together is, of the hoops that I've tripped on over the 20 years, there's something that I think is common among builders that builders need to be cautious about. And this has nothing to do with business and has everything to do with your own personal integrity and personal management. Number one, you as a builder always need to have impeccable integrity, no matter what that means for your business or your finances. And over the years when I've and we together as a team have maintained our integrity and made sure that we always did the right thing for clients, that's always landed us in the right spot, no matter what happened. Number two, though, one thing that's gotten me tripped up over the years, and this is very personal and has nothing to do with business, is I think that I haven't always been good with personal jealousy or personal materialism. And here's a quick example from almost 20 years ago. When I moved to Texas, 2005, and was starting my company, I saw other builders that I thought were really successful, and I was envious or jealous of some of their successes. And one builder in particular that I was pretty jealous of was a guy who was a little bit younger than me. You probably knew who I'm talking about. We're not going to say his name. He was a little younger than me. It seemed like he had everything together. He had great looking family. His wife was beautiful. He always drove a really nice car, not a beat up pickup truck like I was driving. He lived in an amazing house that he'd built in a fabulous neighborhood. And I was a little jealous of this guy. And I used some of my retirement money to buy a lot in a, not a fancy neighborhood, but a nicer neighborhood than I am in currently. And I did this all pre-recession. And I went forward with planning a very big, like 5,000 square foot, fabulous house. Because I thought, oh, you know, a successful homebuilder needs to build his own house and needs to drive a good car, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what's going to happen here. The recession hit. I literally lost every penny of the plans that I put into that. I had to fire sale the lot that I bought. And I probably, in the end, lost, I don't know, well into six figures of out of my retirement in money that's, you know, that I converted into money, all because I was jealous of another builder. Now, was there more than that? Sure, you could say I was trying to better my family or whatever. But that set me back quite a few years in eventually building my own house, which I just finished a house a year ago for my family. So at right around age 49, I moved into my new house that I'd built for my family. And the other thing that now that I'm a year in that house, now this is the 50-year-old Matt talking to the 32-year-old Matt, houses don't make you happy. cars don't make you happy. Tim and I are meeting with a client tomorrow at a job site. It's a job that we're taking over for a client that has a bunch of problems in the house and a lot of leaks. This is a multi-million dollar house. They have fabulous cars. And when I saw them last, they were in tears. Their house has all kinds of problems. And it just reminded me that life is so much more than fancy houses and fancy cars. And the times when the materialism and the me thinking that I wasn't successful because I didn't have whatever XYZ had, this other builder, boy, that those things are not important. And to make a long story short, that other builder that I was really jealous of went out of business in the recession, moved out of town.
It was all smoke and mirrors.
It was smoke and mirrors, probably.
I think he was living well above his means.
Probably.
And if we use him as a model of what we wanted, we didn't really know the backstory that turned out to be all fake.
So borrowed money.
Right. So, you know, quite honestly, home building is a humbling business. We live through economic cycles. We live through bad decisions. Mm-hmm. We live through bad clients, bad designs, and we learn from all that.
Yep.
And we have to be patient in our growth, in our understanding of what we're capable of, in our ability to manage projects and manage the company. And if we are consistent and persistent, I think over time we'll get all those things. We'll achieve all those goals that we have. But you certainly won't achieve it in the first 5 or 10 years.
No, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Right.
And honestly, Tim, I really appreciate you and your personal integrity. And in all the years I've known you, you've always driven a white Chevy truck. And you've lived in the same house since 1982 that you built for your family. And your house is gorgeous. But there are some other builders that I know that I was jealous of that like moved every 2 years and had to build a new fabulous house for their family. And I thought that was the way that I needed to do it. And that's kind of the path I was heading down. And I really appreciate the model that you've had for me. And then I see a lot of other builders in town that say, look, I don't need to live in the same types of houses that I'm building. There's a builder in town. I think I can say his name. This guy named Buzzy Woodworth.
Woodworth,
right?
Yeah.
And he builds like 10 plus million dollar houses. And I remember building a house across the street from his current, or I'm assuming he still is there, his personal house. And he lived in a very modest, normal house. It wasn't the fanciest. It obviously wasn't a shack either. But it struck me, this was maybe 10 years ago I was building that house, that, oh, this guy's fabulously successful as a builder, meaning he's building these amazing houses, but he didn't have to come home to a $10 million house. And I thought, oh, that's so interesting. And he's 20 years or maybe even 30 years older than me. That really struck me. And I've thought about that a lot, how Buzzy was at the job site with these crazy expensive houses and came home to his modest house and seemingly was very happy with that.
Yeah, that's like the old story of Sam Walton. He used to drive this old pickup truck for years and years after he was a billionaire, but that truck ran like a top. It was well maintained. It was taken care of. And I think that's true. We can own a humble house, but we owe it to the house and to our family to take care of it.
That's right.
To maintain it and spend the money that's necessary to make it perform properly.
That's right.
My house is not the same house as it was when I built it.
Yeah.
I've morphed it into something that's a much better home.
It's a great house.
But I'd rather do that and stay in my current location than to build a larger, more complex house in a different location. But that's just me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the takeaway for the 20 year ago, Matt, is don't base your success on what other people are doing or what other folks in your industry are doing. Base it on your own personal level of integrity. And for me, success is a lot to do with my family, my personal life, things outside of work, and making sure that I maintain my integrity as a builder. And yes, I have gotten some financial success. My wife drives a nice car and we have a nice house. But really, now that we're there, those things, I would have been perfectly happy in my old house. And my old house, I was there for 15 years and my kids were really sad to leave it for a much nicer house because that's what they were used to. So that's my advice to the 32-year-old Matts that are listening to this is don't base your life on your possessions or your things. There's much more important things than the house or the car that you drive.
I agree. And I think in observation of you and what you've created, I really strongly believe that what makes a home builder successful over a long period of time is their ability to build trust.
Mm-hmm.
Their
100%.
Their integrity will sell them work year after year after year after year.
Yes.
And if you ever get in a situation where you have a disagreement with a client, it's your fault for not pre-setting their expectations or reviewing how the process should work.
Yeah.
Because if there's a misunderstanding, it's because you haven't probably covered it ahead of time.
Yep.
So learn from that. Live with those mistakes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to pay for those mistakes,
even though
it's not really your fault.
That's right.
It's your responsibility for not having set those expectations.
Yeah, and then move on and don't make the same mistake
again. Don't make the same
again.
Mistake again, exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we've been really successful at, Tim. And Steve, who's a part of our group too, has been excellent at, hey, when we make a mistake on a job, we add that to our disclosure sheet too.
Yeah.
You know, all the times when we've had a client who is upset with, and you know, whatever, that we didn't set proper expectations, whether it's marble that stained more than or chipped more than they expected, or paint grip that you know, didn't look what they expected. We've tried to be really good at making sure that we set ourselves up not to make that same mistake. And we don't beat ourselves up. You know, when we make a mistake, we live with it. We do our best to reconcile and then move on. And I think what's happened because of all that is we've got a lot of repeat business. We've got a lot of clients that come back to us on future projects, on second homes. And that's really fun to see. And that's a great thing for a builder, especially if we do end up heading into some amount of downturn,
right,
to have those clients who are coming back to you and not always relying on new blood to come into your pipeline.
That's right. That's right.
Gosh, we should probably call it quits here, Tim. We're running up on 40 minutes here.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Guys, really thank you for listening to the podcast. It's been really, really fun. We're on season 2 now. We're coming up on season 3 here pretty soon. At the time of publishing this, I think this is being published just a couple days before my birthday. And I'm really humbled as a 50-year-old now to see how much has changed in our industry and where we've ended up with this business. I think you all know we have two companies. We have a home building company, and then we have this media company that Tim and I are producing content for. And it's really, really fun for me to give back to the industry and see how wise folks like Tim, and now, believe it or not, I'm joining you in the old man ranks here now that I'm 50, are able to give back to our industry. And as a side note, Tim, do you remember when you went to someone's 50th birthday party not that many years ago? There was like tombstones and there was a death theme at the party, and it's going to be any minute before you die.
Black balloons.
Yeah. Are we going to have that at my party? Is it going to be death themed and like tombstones?
Let's hope not.
I'm hoping that has changed. It seems like 50 is not the death sentence that it once was.
65-year-old people don't typically look at 50-year-old people as old. So, you know, to me, that, you know, we should have like a baby shower maybe.
Well, that's one of the things I love about this business there, Tim, is that even though you and I have built for many years, there's still something to learn. There's still something that we could do better.
Have to learn every day.
And every job could be a little better than the last one. And that really makes it fun for me. And I know for you as well.
That's right.
All right, guys, with that being said, follow us on TikTok or Instagram. Otherwise, we'll see you next time on the Build Show podcast.